I met some folks from up north last night, and they were really afraid of the 20-mile-an-hour wind. Thank you for introducing me that way, Karen, as a rock star. I don't know about a rock star, but we did trash our hotel room last night. And I did not, because I have my full city room. So anyway, I'm kidding about the trash. Guys, I'm excited to be a part of this. I apologize for yesterday, as I was telling the folks when I walked in a moment ago, that we had some, the storm kind of came through South Florida. It wasn't very bad, but it rained a lot. So I woke up Monday morning, and my kids were all standing, you know, downstairs in the back door, they're looking in the backyard, and they were just looking at something. They were fascinated by something, but I figured, what could it be? And, you know, I was kind of still blurry-eyed and all that, and all of a sudden, I walk out and I see pool tiles floating, which that's not supposed to happen. Our pool overflowed, despite the fact that I drained it, and so what happened is the water got under the pavers, and some of the pavers were floating by, yeah. So, and because they're set on sand, so that kind of disrupted my travel. There's nothing like broken pool tiles to change your travel plans. So, but we were able to drive over here yesterday, and that was a lot of fun. Today is my youngest son's fifth birthday, which cost me about $300 at the Cracker Barrel. So anyway, if you ever been there, that's one of the great American stories. You should be one in every block, not right next to the Chick-fil-A. Which reminds me of yesterday. We stopped at a Chick-fil-A. We stopped for a... my five-year-old needed a bathroom break, so we stopped at the gym. You're going to go to the bathroom, might as well be at Chick-fil-A. And we bought a couple of those Greek shakes that they make. And a gentleman comes up to me. He's a Russian immigrant of Jewish descent. And what he wanted me to, he recognized me, and he wanted me to promise him that America wasn't going to change, that America would continue to be the special country that it's been for over two centuries. I think sometimes, and I'll talk about that a little bit on Thursday night, I think sometimes when you're born and raised in America, it's easy to take for granted how different we are than the rest of the world. So we folks that came from somewhere else who know what life is like before America and outside America, they know it all too well. And I think the obligation that we have is to ensure that not that America becomes more like the rest of the world, but that the rest of the world becomes more like America. And in so many ways, that's what's at stake in this election. If you think about it, we need to remember who we are and what it is that has made us the most exciting and exceptional nation in all of human history. It's a set of principles and values that really are historic. You know, up until America, almost everyone in the world was poor. I mean, we need to remember that. For almost all of human history, almost everyone was poor. Wealth and power and influence belonged to just a handful of people, and it was always the same people. If you were born to a poor family, you were poor. Whatever your parents did, that's what you did. You can only go as far as they did. You don't know the right people. If you weren't born into the right circumstances, you can only go so far. But that begins to change when you tell people that their rights don't come from their government and don't come from their laws. Their rights don't come from society. Their rights come from their creator. When you tell people that every single one of them, irrespective of what circumstance they were born into, had the same rights as anybody else to go as far as their talent and their work will take them, a miracle happens. And that's what the American free enterprise system really was, is a product of that belief. And that's what we inherited. A place of extraordinary prosperity. A place where every single day people go out and leave their jobs and start a new business, and it works. And I think in so many ways this election is a choice about whether we're still that. At the end of the day, what we need to remember is that what jobs and prosperity are created when someone goes out and takes the money that they have, whether they borrowed it or they made it, and they have the confidence to invest it in starting a new business. And it works. And that new business, they hire other people who are now making money, who spend that into the economy, which in turn generates jobs and prosperity. By the way, I didn't learn about that in college. I didn't read about it in a book. I didn't read some magazine article on the way up here. I know it because I lived it. My parents were working class folks. My dad was a bartender his whole life. My mom was a maid, a cashier, a stock clerk at Kmart. And why did my parents have jobs? Because somebody had the money and the confidence to open them the hotel that they worked at. And then people made enough money to take three-day vacations to Las Vegas when we lived there, or Miami Beach when we lived there before or again. And the result is they raised our family on the money that they made. They provided us the most important thing any parent can give a child, which is a strong and stable home. And they encouraged us to dream any dream we wanted, because in America, these things were possible. We didn't have to be what they were. My parents worked jobs so one day we could have careers. And the fundamental question that we must face now is whether we're still that, or whether we want to become more like the rest of the world, where the government dominates the economy. And so really, that's what I hope this convention will be about, is that defining choice between two very different directions. And I hope we can do a good job of putting that forward. By the way, I think our nominee is an extraordinary human being. That comes across too. I hope at the end of this convention, irrespective about whether some people may agree or disagree with them on every issue or on some issues, what Americans will take away is that this is a special person. If you look at the way he has lived his life as a father, as a husband, as a grandfather, as a leader in his church and his community, this man's a role model. I mean, this man is someone that younger men like me look at and say, yeah, that's how a husband operates. That's how you're a good father. That's how you balance work and family. That's how you make your community around you better, and at the same time, you can be successful in whatever career you've chosen. So irrespective of how some Americans may feel about him on the issues, I hope what they will understand is that this is a special human being. But apart from it, we have a very stark choice between two very different views of what government's job should be and what government should be involved in doing. And this election comes down to that. And it comes down to that not just in the presidential race, but in senatorial races and congressional races, and gubernatorial races all across the country, and I know you'll be involved in those as well. So the importance of your state to our party is impossible to overstate. What's your state motto? We make presidents? Well, you certainly make nominees, I can tell you that. Obviously, I'm glad that you've been able to share this resort here with the Florida delegation, and in so many ways, we have so much in common. No, not just storms, in so many ways, both of our states are places that people come to because they couldn't be who they were meant to be somewhere else. Because in some other state or even in some other country, they knew they were called to more, but they just couldn't make it possible for whatever reason. So they come in search of a better life. That's the story of America. Let me close by telling you something that I did a few weeks ago. My kids got to visit us when I was in Washington for the summer. And we went to the Smithsonian. They have a fascinating exhibit on the Star Spangled Banner. It's actually there behind a glass encasement. And it's really startling to watch. And I guess I always knew the story about the Star Spangled Banner and how it came to be. But I didn't really fully appreciate what it meant. And in fact, what our flag meant. And maybe the next time maybe you hear the national anthem, you'll be reminded of it. You know, our national anthem is unique. It ends in a question. People don't realize that sometimes it ends in a question. And the question is a challenge as much as anything else. Does that star-spangled banner still wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? And every generation's had to answer that, whether that flag still waves, whether we are still that land of the free, whether we're still that home of the brave. You know, that was in question back when the star-spangled banner was written. America had won its independence, but it hadn't really established itself as a nation in the War of 1812. England came after us pretty good, especially once they dispatched to the French. They marched into Washington. They burned down the Capitol and the White House, and they were headed to conquer. I mean, literally, the young republic was on its last legs. And the next plan was to go into Baltimore and take the port there in Fort McHenry and just keep on going. And this guy, Francis Scott Key, was sent to negotiate the release of some Americans that the British had taken, because they would go on a ship. They would take the ship and they would tell the Americans, you are now British sailors. They'd basically take them as hostages. And he went and negotiated their release, and it was fascinating. A different time, a different place. They actually sat down at a very nice dinner with the admiral or whatever it was. And he told them, sure, you could have these prisoners, but the only catch is you can't leave until tomorrow. You've got to stay with us because you've overheard our battle plans for Baltimore, and I can't have you go back and tell the Americans. So he had to spend the night on a British ship, and he watched the bombardment of Fort McHenry. And you can just imagine what it looked like, the explosions through the night. And he could see through the flashes of those explosions a little small storm flag flying over the fort. And what he didn't know is, did we survive? Were the people inside that fort still there, or did they abandon it? Were they killed? Did the young nation not survive? Because if that fort fell, Baltimore would fall, and that would be the end of it. And so once the bombardment stopped, he had to wait until sunrise, until the dawn came and the smoke cleared, to figure out whether the young republic had survived. And when the dawn came and the smoke cleared, he saw a new flag flying over the fort. And it wasn't that small storm flag. It was a new flag with 13 stars and 13 stripes, and it was flying over, and it was a little beat up, but it was flying. And what it meant was that somebody in there had raised it as a sign that we're still here and we're still standing. And in so many ways, that's where we are right now as a country. The world has watched what we've gone through over the last few years. And there are some questions about whether America is still that place, whether it is still the land of the free and the home of the brave, whether it's still capable of being in this new century what it was in the last. And the challenge for us is to raise that flag again so that the whole world knows that, yes, we are. Yeah, we've been through some tough times. We're facing some struggles and challenges. But we're going to do what our parents and grandparents did. We're going to do whatever it takes to ensure that not only are we a shining example to the world, but that our children inherit what they deserve, the greatest nation in all of human history. So that's why I'm so excited about this year and about working with you. And thank you for having me back.